evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is Thursday, July 5th, 2018. I'm Catherine Austin Fitz, and I'm delighted you could join me this evening. For those of you in the U.S., I hope you had a wonderful July 4th holiday. It's always good to get a break, especially when things are this intense. Hold that date, September 22nd, Asheville, where we have lunch with Dr. Mark Skidmore at the Biltmore Estate. It's up at Salieri. Just click on lunch with Catherine. You've got to be logged in to sign up. Subscribers only. I'm in Sofia, Bulgaria now for a week to see The Ring with Thomas Meyer. I'm going to be recording a follow-up interview with him, so make sure in the next day or two, if you have questions for Thomas, you send them in. There's a lot. It's interesting. Dark Journalist has been doing an X series that includes lots on Steiner, so I'm seeing more interest in Steiner. So if you have questions on Steiner, Thomas is the perfect person to ask. I'm going to be leaving Sofia on the 11th and spend 5 days in Bucharest in Romania. And I'm going to be seeing Jason Bowden-Smith when I'm there. So always interested to hear what he's working on his new businesses to support mitochondria. And we'll talk about that when he is ready to. We'll see what he says when I'm in Bucharest with him. Then I'm headed to Netherlands, and I'll be in Friesland for 2 weeks. If anybody's interested in having lunch or dinner, let me know and we can arrange. Then I'll head down to 4 days in Zurich with a short side trip to Basel. I'll be there for Swiss National Day. I've never celebrated Swiss National Day, so we'll see what we see. Then I head to Lake Constance, then over to Chartres and Paris, Brittany, then southern France, then back to the Netherlands, then to Scotland, and head back to the States on September 9th. I'm really glad to be in places where the telecommunications work. By the time I left the U.S., it was like living in a third world country, except you had first world prices. But the reality of telecommunication services for someone in independent media is just, you know, I can't say enough bad about it. So it's wonderful. Every country I get to, I just get a new SIM card, pop it in. Everything is easy. It's inexpensive and it works just fine. Totally the opposite in the United States. In October, I'll be back for October's the Scientists for Peace Conference. You can learn more about that at, under events in on the Salieri website. That's October 19th to 21st. Some tips on the website. We have the last year of content up on home and then the rest on the library. That's so that the last year of content, which is most of what people are looking for, is really quick and easy. All of the Salieri reports are up in the library. We have a slow process to bring the rest up so that we get 100% up, but I thought it would be helpful. I wrote a little commentary called FAQ, How Do I Access the Full Archive of Subscriber Content? You can access that on the commentary section of the website. We also have a core concepts section posted. If you go down on the right towards the bottom of the website, you can just click to core concepts. That has a lot of our popular articles and materials linked up in it. So if you're new to Salieri, I would strongly suggest you take a stroll through core concepts and access anything that's interesting to you. We also, at a request from a subscriber, put up a What's New section. If you click on What's New, you'll see everything that is recently posted. You'll only see that after you log in, so make sure you're logged in. And then we posted a new special Salieri report, Rob Kirby and I talking about the missing money. The title is How Would We Write the Movie? Rob and I basically pretended, okay, we're script writers. How would we explain the missing money disappearing? So we go through all the different mechanisms that could have been used and then talk about which ones we would pick if we were writing the movie. Anyway, a very fun discussion with Rob Kirby. Our theme tonight is the cafes of Vienna. I just came from 5 days in Vienna. Everyone is outside, not indoors watching TV. There are hardly any smartphones anywhere. You can't see them. They're not walking down the street watching them. As they sit at the cafe, they're talking with each other. There's no smartphones, or rarely are they present. Instead, it's a very human and real existence. It's remarkably media-free or ignorant of media. The only media you ever saw was the people who were watching the World Cup. Vienna is very much the eastern part of Central Europe, so you're living between the east and west, and you feel both worlds sort of as though you're in the sort of in a dimension between. And of course, there's a very rich musical and artistic presence. The number of people employed in music or the arts here is quite remarkable. Everyone is very aware that historic things are happening. Of course, we had the G7 meeting recently, but this is going to be a month of summits. So you have the NATO summit next week in Brussels, but then you have the Trump-Putin summit in Helsinki the week following, and that, of course, is the talk of the town. Interestingly enough, it's going to be the same week as the Bohemian Grove comes together, and so you kind of find it interesting that Trump's going to be in Helsinki talking to Putin while the Grove is whacking up the appropriations. Kind of wonder what the communication between the two might be. Again, there's going to be great interest in what happens in these two meetings, given what happened in the G7 meeting, and real questions around what the relationship between Europe and the US is going to be. But a great sense that something historic is happening. Everybody knows the models, and the global model needs to evolve. In Vienna, you get a much more realistic and complex picture of Russia and the Ukraine than you hear in the US. And one of the things you can really feel is the extent to which the Ukraine whiners and Russian interference in the election whiners are seen as just passe. Everybody sort of rolls their eyes and tolerates them, but it's the world is moving on. They have a new chancellor, the youngest ever. His name is Sebastian Kurz, and he's taking a real leadership role in erecting hard borders and dealing aggressively with immigration. Immigration, of course, is a major issue here, and it's a complex one. But there's a real feeling that someone is trying to destroy Europe, and their forces at work to really destroy the continent and use immigration to do so. Everywhere you hear and read about flow wars, not just in Europe, it's all over the world, flow of people, flow of data, flow of money, flow of trade, and the competition on all these flows continues to ramp up. In part, technology is power shifting, but the rise of Asia and growing populations and growing middle class and the pressure that it puts on resources is power shifting everyone and everything. And of course, the centralizers continue to try to further centralize control to deal with it. Anyway, the way to deal with all of this effectively is human, intimate communication with each other and with nature. Let's enjoy our lives together without technology, if possible. Vienna certainly has the right idea. Human civilization can and does work. Money and markets. I have been talking for several years about my concern that we would find ourselves in a situation with a serious dollar bear trap. And it's beginning to look like it's happening and could get much worse. This is something to keep an eye on. It's too early to tell which way it goes, but it's definitely started and you can feel it. If you look at the global charts, you can see the giant sucking sound of capital flowing back into the US, and that puts pressure on everybody and everything. First of all, the Fed is tightening and is sort of following interest rates up. Trump, in the meantime, is so fiscal, monetary policy is getting tighter, just as fiscal policy is getting showing more and more largesse. Trump is spending, and that means the US is debt is rising, and the US debt is soaking up dollars and commanding dollars as interest rates rise from all around the globe. And that means there's an emerging market dollar shortage that's growing painful. We've seen unprecedented growth in dollar borrowing throughout the emerging market since 2008, And so now it's getting harder to earn dollars. The trade war makes it even harder to earn dollars, at the same time that the US is calling all the dollars home. So if we get a liquidity trap that's serious in the emerging markets, of course, the question is, will the Fed ease up or will they play hardball? And that's very much related to the negotiations between the Trump administration and just about everybody else on trade wars and tariffs. Let me run through how the markets have done so far this year. I'm using the pre-holiday close. The US dollar index now up 2.82% for the year. It's rising steadily against many other currencies, and that's part of what the challenge in the emerging markets. Fixed income, the long treasury is now down 3% for the year, the intermediate down 2.1%, the bond aggregate down 1.74%, and junk down 1.2%. Interestingly enough, you're starting to see the White House grouse at the Fed about the rate hikes. And it's not surprising since they're really starting to crowd a lot of both private and other sovereign debts out of the market as the US scarfs up more and more capital. Equities, the S&P, really the only market that's up, and that's very much thanks to tech and defense. A little bit real estate is now in the black. S&P up 2.74%. Home builders down 10.3%. What's amazing is if you look at almost every industry sector, they're all down except for tech, defense, and again, real estate's up a tiny bit. The European ETF down 3.57% for the year. Germany down 3.7%. China has taken a swan dive since June 1st. It's really remarkable to look at the charts of the different markets against each other and look at China's sort of swan dive since June 1st. So the large cap down 7.61%. The small cap only down 1.79%, but remember that's way down from their high so far this year. And emerging markets down 8.35%. The one of the dynamics, and it's very much affected by, I would say, the shift of the financial coup capital and the tax reform, major global deal making. It's the highest it's ever been since people, the major publications have been tracking it. So far, as we see, 2.5 trillion in the first half, according to the Financial Times. That's up 65% from last year. 79 deals above 5 billion, and a record 35 deals above 10 billion is another sign of more centralization. One of the things that is inspiring all these deals is the U.S. telcos buying media. Much of that is a defense against what's happening with Netflix and Amazon. You really have the internet companies coming in and pulling from traditional media. And so you have AT&T buying Time Warner and Disney buying Fox assets, Comcast trying to come in on that one. We have T-Mobile and Sprint. So it's a combination of the telcos and the media. The absurdity of the model that someone like AT&T is using, given the repeal of net neutrality, is really appalling. What you're saying is you're going to take companies that really have monopolies, very much integrated with the NSA, and allow them to block or interfere with their competitors' content and flow, on the theory that markets can handle whatever needs to happen. It's pretty frightening, and it's gonna be part of delivering a lot of pain over the next couple of years, is my prediction. I'm thinking of talking about it a lot more in the third quarter wrap up. The rebalancing with China that we talked about when we interviewed Steve Roach and his incredible book on balance, which I recommend to you strongly if you don't understand this process underway. So far, the trade wars look low tech, but in fact, if you look at probably the most important issue, it's really high tech, as one of the Trump administration's fear. There's a great piece in the Financial Times, the AI arms race, the tech fear behind Donald Trump's trade war with China. One real concern is that China is working steadily to basically surpass us as global tech leader. And if you look at the resources they're investing, they have the capability of doing it. And this would be devastating for our economic position globally. Another issue that's very important when you look at the trade war with China is Paul Craig Roberts had a very interesting piece. I put it in the notes, and I suggest you take a look at it. One of the things he points out that many of the imbalances between us and China are not Chinese company, there's American companies. The implication being maybe Trump ought to go yell at the American companies, which is a very good point. So there's a deep codependency in the relationship that you're not really seeing when you see the tweets fly back and forth about the imbalances with China. There's no doubt that there needs to be a rebalancing, and that's why if I were you, I strongly recommend Steve Roche's book, Unbalanced. It was published several years ago, but it's still very relevant to what we're watching. Let me go through commodities. Commodities now up the basket 1.86 for the year. Gold and silver down. When China goes down, you can expect them to go down. Gold down 5%, silver down 6.75% for the year. What's interesting is Rob Kirby, who deals in precious metals, just did an interesting interview with Greg Hunter and pointed out that the demand for physical gold from the East is very significant. And of course, oil up 16% for the year. So what we watch is tech, defense, and oil are up, and everything else pretty much down. Again, it's worth stressing for money and markets, this is summit month. And if you look at what's going to happen at NATO, plus the Trump-Putin meeting in Helsinki, and then the Bohemian Grove, a lot of decisions are going to come out of this week. The NATO summits in Brussels and the Trump-Putin meeting, again, Helsinki, Finland, some good articles up in News Trends and Stories. The data laws are flying. California passed a new privacy law. I haven't had a chance to get to take a look, but needless to say, it's going to make life much more complicated, as are the GDPR regulations in Europe are making life much more complicated. And this week, the EU was pushing for big copyright reform, and they backed off after major lobbying, particularly from the big tech firms, and real concern that this was going to mess with internet freedom. And now we see Germany's top telecom regulators saying that the U.S. tech groups require more regulation. So I just think the data wars have only yet begun, and it's going to make life very, very complicated for anybody who's got an online business. Welcome to my world. Merkel and May are both not having a fun summer. Merkel really faced a revolution about immigration, including from her interior minister. She's reached a last-minute compromise. No one's quite clear about the specifics. But she seems to have saved her government for now. Merkel has more lives than, the cat with nine lives. And then May, of course, struggling with Brexit. And both just keep turtling forward, but it's not easy. Swiss negotiations with the EU, it's amazing. The Swiss just don't leak. And so the only thing that keeps being said is they're hard and they're going to continue to be hard. So, that's a fierce negotiation. Switzerland's problem, of course, is they're landlocked and they've got the EU 360 degrees around them. And they're tough on immigration, but it's a real fight. Interesting factoid that I hadn't realized, the King Report put this out. FinTech companies originated 36% of total personal loans in 2017, compared with less than 1%. So internet websites, fintech companies, are basically now a very significant part of the personal loan market. How about that? Anyway, let me just read the headlines. Personal loan surge to a record as fintech firms lead the way. Outstanding balances rose about 18% in the first quarter to $120 billion. Fintech companies originated 36% of total personal loans in 2017, compared with less than 1% in 2010. Quite remarkable. Swamp drama. Glencore, which is the world's largest commodity trader, which was founded by Mark Rich. That's Mark Rich of the famous Bill Clinton last minute pardon of Mark Rich, has received a subpoena from the U.S. Department of Justice over money laundering. Its share price was off by a major percentage. This is pretty interesting because if you look at Glencore's position in the world and what its relationship was vis-a-vis the Clintons, and the fact that there is an ongoing investigation by the FBI starting the beginning of this year on the Clinton Foundation, some very interesting things could come out. It's too early to know what dots connect. But if I were the Clintons, a subpoena to Glencore would make me extremely nervous. Supreme Court, clearly Anthony Kennedy has resigned, and that gives Trump the opportunity to make a new appointment. We keep seeing headlines of who the front runners are, but hopefully, my expectation is we certainly can expect an announcement sometime this month. Very unfortunately, Ross Ulbricht's petition to the Supreme Court has been denied, which means that effort now becomes a push for clemency. And I'm sure you're going to be hearing more from the Salieri Report on that. We're going to do everything we can to support and help. Hope porn, fear porn, disinformation watch. I've never seen the hope porn, fear porn, and disinformation as hot and heavy. The missing money is getting a lot of attention. There's a reporter from LA who, Lord knows who assigned him, but he's labeling himself the great expert on the missing money. He did an interview with Lee Camp and had to read from a teleprompter. And you could tell he really didn't understand the story. It was pretty funny. These things happen. You throw somebody in there, and then they sort of try and brand themselves to the story and then turn it in the direction they want. So, for example, the DOD suddenly does an audit and they announce, oh, turns out it was never missing, problem gone. So basically they're thrown in there to try and steer it in a different direction. And if you're someone like me, you just have to keep moving forward and trying to ignore them. I kind of think of them as like flypaper. And if there's one rule, don't pick up a piece of flypaper as you're walking down the street. But then David Wilcox jumped in. David Wilcox, who was very much a promoter of the Corey Good Secret Space program. And I never watched a lot of it, but apparently there was one alien group called the Blue Avians, which people started referring to as the Blue Chickens. Anyway, so a very astute ally sent me an article after Wilcox jumped in on top of this guy from L.A., saying, oh, wow, the missing money is now merging with the Blue Chickens. Let me just read you his note. Fortunately, I wouldn't waste your time with this from Wilcox, but the obvious retooling of your missing trans theme, good guys have the missing money, don't worry, mixed with merging into Q suddenly, and then the praise of Blackwater, Eric Prince, and Alan Dershowitz tells me that the Corey Good Gaia Circus and the Q PSYOP are interrelated, and suddenly both of them are pushing don't worry, be happy, cabal rest 2.0 line that the white hats will handle it all. Anyway, so this was sent to me in Farrell, and Farrell writes back, thanks for the heads up. I'm not surprised. I'll believe them when my check for $60,000 or thereabouts arrives in the mail. That's the 21 trillion works out to $65,000 per person. I expect the Q post to get on board with the phony version of the SSP, Secret Space Program, our ally continues. There was an article in Mint about the Q op, sort of as hope porn, that was really good. I posted it on the website, and it had a great comment referring to the hope and change sort of plan of Barack Obama. It said that QAnon's Trust the Plan has become the sequel to Hope and Change. I thought that was one of the great lines of the quarter. So what's up with this enormous wave of just really a tsunami of disinformation and what I call hope porn? The reality is, what we're watching is a lot of the financial coup money is coming back into the country. Our assets are getting bought with our own money. We're getting hired with our own money. It's funny. One guy was promoting, oh, Donald Trump's getting our money back and we're all going to get jobs. Wait a minute. If you steal my money and then I have to earn it back pre-tax, that's what I call slavery. Anyway, but they are absolutely licking their chops on coming in and doing great, big prioritization. If you go back to the first coverage we did of the Trump administration and clash of civilization in the first quarter wrap up in 2017, I said the big risk here was going to be big piggy prioritizations, and that's exactly where it looks like this is going. The White House put out a big re-engineering reorganization document, and if you go through it, what you'll see is privatization of TVA is proposed. You should, all the Tennessee senators went nuts over that one. Privatization of the post office and the way it's teed up, there are a lot of dirty tricks involved. And if they succeed in doing it, it's going to be a real hit on rural economies. But the one that's the dead giveaway is the attack on OPM. OPM is the Office of Personnel Management. They're moving some of the OPM functions to the White House, others to the Department of Defense, basically tearing it apart. And extremely critical of OPM. Here's the reality. If you want to prioritize, you've got to kill the civil service. And whether it's the disinformation attacking the civil service or what the White House is proposing to do to OPM, that's certainly what it looks like to me. They're white out on the big issues. So if you look at the big issues that need to be addressed, they're not in this White House reorganization. Anyway, so I hate to say it, but unfortunately, when Joseph and I talked about it in the clash of civilization, I'm afraid we nailed it. As I said, the Grove is meeting this month, and I would expect they make the final decisions on the appropriations. And so that'll be one of the important things that comes out of it. It was interesting. There was a debate. I don't normally do this, but there was a debate on a website that called The Root, which caters to the sort of African American intellects, and they had something about I know it was an attack on or white people are scaredy cats, something like that. And I jumped in and wrote a long post about how the private prison wave happened, basically engineered with the help of a lot of African American attorneys and professionals in the Clinton administration, and had a lot of links and or a lot of references, and it was very, very intelligent, very persuasive, very knowledgeable, and it was literally deleted within 20 minutes. It was quite extraordinary, and it was late at night, so the censorship on the internet is phenomenal. And of course, as you know, I believe they can do it all with AI. So what do you do about it? Please, 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 don't fall for the disinformation. Don't fall for the hope porn. Don't fall for the fear porn. Just be very, very discerning about who you listen to, and just respect the line between entertainment and real news. And please stick with people of integrity. I keep saying that, and yet I keep seeing subscribers really fascinated by the entertainment value of things like the Blue Chicken. Our hero this week is Christy Cameron. I put up a commentary called "The Best Little Fireworks Stand in Texas." Christy Cameron is a great subscriber and friend who's had a machine shop down in Richardson, Texas. It's very successful. And for decades, her dad got her going when she was a young girl. Her family's had a fireworks stand. Christy's kept it going, and she just upgraded big time. And I asked her, I was so impressed. I asked her for some photos, and a description. So I put it up in the commentary. It was perfect for 4th of July. And so check it out. Christy Cameron, the best little fireworks stand in Texas. A great family business, both the machine shop and the fireworks stand. And it just goes to show you what can happen if you just keep being useful. Let's go to the movies. I recommended a PBS report on the 2013 acquisition of Smithfield Foods. It's the largest pig and pork producer in the world, and it was purchased by the WH Group in China. At the time, it was the biggest Chinese acquisition in the United States. And their acquisition of Smithfield gave the Chinese group 146,000 acres of land, making the Chinese one of the largest overseas owners of American farmland. That's important because the interview tonight with Harry Blaser and Bill Nyman is called Hog Heaven. It's the next in the food Harry Blaser's food series. And one of the things they talk about is the extraordinary pressure of the sort of financial and centralized interests in the hog market. And of course, one reason is with a rising middle class in China, what does a rising middle class want? They want more animal protein. And of course, what does that mean? It means tremendous pressure on and competition for hogs and pressure on the hog market. If you haven't gone back and read our annual wrap-up in 2016 on the global harvest, it's tremendous background for the next our theme on the rise of the Asian consumer and really understanding the rebalance going on between the United States and China, because the American farmer is a very big part of that. And the pressure on China to keep their population fed is enormous. I remember there was one great quote when I was working on the wrap-up on the Chinese equity markets where a Chinese politician said, you know, a small number of people own stock, but everybody eats pork, and the price of pork is what concerns me. The quote I used in the interview with Harry and Bill, let me just read it. I thought it was very appropriate. Food and energy prices are up. In the last 6 months alone, we've had a record all-time high for the price of beef, pork, and shrimp. This is from 2013. These are the core proteins that emerging market workers depend on. Onion prices have been known to bring governments down in India. In Brazil, tomatoes are the drivers of social protests. In China, it's pork. So the price of pork is a very important political factor in China. And it's having a major impact on the market. So I thought those two videos would be good background. The first, PBS's report on the acquisition of Smithfield. But then the second is a recent report on China's threats of pork tariffs. And it shows you the extent to which the farmers can get whipsawed back and forth. Bill Nyman, of course, the leading expert and leading rancher on raising high quality meats, very knowledgeable about all aspects of the meat market. But Harry intends to go through all of them. And they had a great introductory discussion earlier this year. And then it was Bill Nyman, godfather of grass-fed. But this time Harry wanted to get Bill and talk about pork. So it's another great interview in the food series. Ask Catherine. Catherine saw this article on Zero Hedge today about 600 indictments against medical personnel for opiate overprescribing and fraud. The article goes on to blame the entire opiate epidemic on these doctors. Notice that not one pharma exec is mentioned. Also notice that there's not a word about the cartels running opiates into the states at huge rates and amounts. Notice that it doesn't mention any large healthcare provider organizations to take a hit. This is a howitzer being fired at the last remaining independent physicians in the country trying to treat people in chronic pain. I'm sure that there are many doctors out there scamming the system, but the beatdown comes to all of them. Anyway, it's truly frightening what is happening to the independent doctors. And please take this risk of highly political enforcement seriously. My concern is after the election is over and the wave of piratization starts, Of course, the best defense is a good offense, and that means letting loose what I call the white collar speed traps from Sea to Shining Sea. It's one of the reasons I keep saying, please archive, archive, archive. You have to be excellent at anything related to regulatory or legal compliance, including taxes. You cannot afford to not have great records and be able to document and prove your situation. Anyway, but this is a perfect example of what is probably a highly politically motivated enforcement wave coming down, and it's going to waste an enormous amount of time and energy of what I'm sure is a lot of great doctors. Dear Catherine, I have two questions. First, have you considered interviewing or in some way investigating Quinn Michaels in regard to AI? He offers an insight into what might be going on that is both thought-provoking and, for me, new information. For example, one of the reasons for the Worldwide Collider System is to establish a neutrino communication system. He has no writings, I can tell. If there is any interest, I would be happy to supply some links. I have it on my list to go look at some of his work. I'm not familiar with it. I know who he is. We did do a future science, Ulrich Groniger did a wonderful future science in February on neutrinos. If you haven't listened to it, I recommend it. And then Harry Blaser is going to be interviewing Hugh DeGaris on AI, which we'll publish in August. So stay tuned for that. Second, I'm a fairly new subscriber. I believe that as a subscriber, I would receive the printed quarterly reports. Do I need to go to the store to purchase them separately? Also, since I live outside of the United States, is there any way I could get the printed version in electronic format? Yes, the printed version comes in electronic format in PDF and flipbook. So every wrap-up ultimately is published in PDF form. So it's an exact duplicate of the hard copy, and you can just print it out if you want, and a flipbook as well. When you subscribe to either a digital version or a print digital and print. So if you subscribe to digital, then you're just scheduled to get the digital. If you subscribe to the digital and print, then you'll get the print as well. If you did get the digital and not the digital and print, you can order the hard copies individually. But again, the PDF and the flipbook go up. And so if you're happy to print it out, you can do that as well. If you go to the store, you'll see there's a digital plus print version. And what you might want to do if you want to change your subscription around, I would recommend calling customer service and talking with them about how you want to do it. Hi, Catherine. This is very informative and thought you might want to see it. The Inhuman Society you speak of seems to be alive and well in Estonia and soon the new city of Noam in Saudi Arabia. This is well researched by Truth Stream Video. Love your work. We just put up the Truth Stream videos on this. They're quite good about the Bilderbergers and smart cities, and they're very much worth watching. As you know, I'm huge fans of the Truth Stream. Aaron and Melissa Dykes, I think they do a great job. There's an article from Kiplinger, The Next 8 Jobs to be Replaced by Robots. It's worth taking a look at because we are seeing the acceleration of new automation and particularly AI, and it's coming much faster than many people believed. So I wanted to read one post that a subscriber sent in. After being in Chicago last week and New York City this weekend, Uber and now Lyft have reduced taxicab business by at least 50%, but also reduced the income of the remaining drivers substantially. Before Uber, it took a cab driver on average 10 hours to make enough to get by in a day, 150 to 200 net after associated expenses, with the potential to make quite a bit more at times. And of course, lots of folks paid in cash, so not as much was reported as income, so it went further. Now it takes considerably longer to make the equivalent net income, and some days the most a driver can make is $100 net. And almost every passenger is paying with a credit card, so now the government has much more transparency regarding the actual income of drivers. And of course, driving a cab was the main way for immigrants to get by, but also to get in the workforce. It was a good entry job so folks could get themselves settled, family settled, and also send some money back home to help relatives. It also was a good job for someone who liked working for themselves with no fixed overhead and where they could determine their own schedule. Many drivers have been displaced by Uber, Lyft. One driver in New York said there are now 60 1,000 Uber drivers in the city versus 14,000 for Yellow Cab, one of the primary cab companies that has three or four times that many in its peak. He said the Uber drivers are often working 14 hours a day to make ends meet and most of the time don't succeed, with many sleeping in their cars or on the street because they can't afford an apartment. A $40 Uber trip from the city to LaGuardia might net the driver $7.50 after tolls, fuel, and what Uber gets. And Uber customers rarely tip. A cab driver in Chicago said that he tried Uber for a year. He put 100,000 miles on his car and in the end just about broke even. He said Uber drivers now won't take folks to the suburbs for $20 because they just can't make it work financially. So the taxi industry and its drivers have been damaged and displaced by a whipping machine that is making big money for corporate Uber and Lyft while creating a class of modern slaves who have to stay on the hamster wheel just to get by. Harvesting has many forms and recipes. Welcome to the technocracy. So that's a, you know, and that's before the robots take over the cars, which is coming. Anyway, but take a look at Kiplinger's next 8 jobs to be replaced by robots, because expect to see a much more significant wave of this kind of automation in the next 2 to 3 years. Again, it's coming fast. Okay, next week, July 2nd, I'll be talking to you from Bucharest in Romania. It's going to be the second quarter wrap-up, the equity overview, and Rambus blockbuster chartology. Given given how strange the market is, we'll have a lot to talk about. And then on July 19th, another break, again, because we ran News Trends and Stories, we'll do Good Manners with Daniel Post-Senning of the Emily Post Institute in Vermont. And then July 26th, the last part of the second quarter wrap-up, the rise of the Asian consumers. Oh, it's fascinating. I never thought this one would be so deep, but of course it is. Again, just a reminder, the special Salieri report, Rob Kirby on the missing money, is up now. And I'm really hoping we'll publish in the first week of August the next future science, the wave genome, with Ulrich Groniger, who I'll be headed into France and share it with. So until next week from Bucharest in Romania, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.